Hare Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunantu Sahaveyankara Bhavahai Tejasvina Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
As he approached the first verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktivedanta Swami became absorbed in the Bhagavatam's purpose. The verses stressed that the Bhagavatam alone could save society from the evil influences of the age of Kali. Srimad Bhagavatam's recommendation for this age was simply to hear from the pure devotees about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The setting of the Bhagavatam was a gathering of sages at Naimisharanya, about 5,000 years ago, at the dawn of the present age of Kali. Foreseeing the degradation of humanity, the sages asked the senior member of the assembly, Suta Goswami, now that Lord Krishna, the shelter of all religious principles, has returned to his spiritual abode, where are religious principles to be found? Suta's answer was that the epic Srimad Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun, was a literary incarnation of God and would give direction to persons lost in the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, under the instruction of his spiritual master, Narad Muni, sat down and entered a deep meditation. In trance, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his energies, and the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. He also saw that the remedy for their suffering was pure devotional service. With this vision and the instructions of his spiritual master as his inspiration, Vyasadeva set about to compile Srimad Bhagavatam to give the highest benefit to the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. In presenting the literary incarnation of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, for the benefit of the Western world, Bhaktivedanta Swami realized that he was performing an important task, following in the footsteps of Srila Vyasadeva. As Srila Vyasadeva had a vision of Krishna and had received direction from his spiritual master before beginning his literary mission, Bhaktivedanta Swami had his vision and had received instructions from his spiritual master. Bhaktivedanta Swami envisioned distributing in mass the book of Srila Vyasadeva. He would not merely translate it, he would personally take it to the West, present it, and teach people in the West, through the book and in person, how to develop pure love of God. Srila Prabhupada. The Communist Party has become popular simply by distributing their literatures. In Calcutta, the Communist agents were inviting friends and reading their literature. The Russians never came to India, but by distributing literature in every language, they got a pretty good number of followers. If it is possible for ordinary, third-class, mundane literature, why shouldn't transcendental literature create devotees all over the world? There is good potency for pushing on these literatures very vigorously from village to village. The Bhagavad Dharma is the original religion of the human society. Whatever else may be passing as religion has come from the Vedic literature. People are after these books. They are hankering for them. Lord Chaitanya said that in every town and village on the surface of the world, they will know the message of the Sankirtan movement. This means that in every village and town all over the world, there are many candidates who are awaiting his message. It is transcendental literature. No one can challenge it. It is done so nicely, without any spot, the spotless Purana. Are you guys watching? The bug there or something? No, just he has a rock and you don't have a rock. You want a rock? I can get a rock. Now you have a rock. So now you don't have to look at his rock. Okay. Yes, so Prabhupada's saying is that the communists, simply by spreading literature and inviting people, discussing, then they made so many people took up the Communist Party line. And so, but communism was, this was coming from communism in Russia. So he's saying the same thing is that you could take the Vedic literatures, go around the world, distribute them, discuss them, invite people, and then they would also take it up. You know, the same principle. So if it's working with mundane literature, why not in spiritual literature? And not only that, it's the real dharma of the living entities. You know, he's saying here that whatever else may be passing as religion has come from the Vedic literature. So whatever else is going on in society, in the world, it is coming from the Vedic literature, like that. People don't know it, don't know the connection, that's the illusion. But religion comes from God, so it's come from these literatures. Bhaktivedanta Swami put his faith in Srimad Bhagavatam, giving up almost all other kinds of missionary activity. And this had been the advice and example of a spiritual master and of Lord Chaitanya. They had not been interested in building costly temples or in creating many neophyte disciples. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had stressed preaching. Preaching meant books, and the best book was Srimad Bhagavatam. To write and publish the Bhagavatam for the enlightenment of the general populace was real service to the Lord. That was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's opinion. He had preferred publishing books to establishing temples, and he had specifically told his disciples to write books. It was the business of advanced, empowered devotees to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. A program to distribute transcendental literature everywhere, with even more expertise than the communists, would create a great positive effect on the people of Europe and America. If Europeans and Americans turned to Krishna consciousness, then the rest of the world would follow. Bhaktivedanta Swami continued, working alone in his room at Chipiwada, absorbed in thoughts of spreading the news of Krishna on a scale never before attempted. Well, now you feel bad, he has a bigger rock than you have. No? Okay, you're cool. You're not feeling jealous or anything. No? Yes? Yes or no?
I don't understand you.
You don't understand, okay? But at least something was said. Very good, very good. He sometimes wondered how Westerners, who were so far removed from the Vedic culture, could adopt it. They were meat-eaters, mleches. When one of his godbrothers had gone to England, the Marquis of Zetland, on hearing the four prohibitions against sinful life, had laughed scornfully, impossible. But Srimad Bhagavatam spoke for itself. That when Prabhupada, some of God brothers had gone to England, tried to preach. And when they were explaining to some of the, you know, leading members of the British society, when they told them the four regulative principles, they were saying it's impossible because that is their life. They don't have anything else like that. So they couldn't understand. But Prabhupada, he was determined, so he went and did it. One could say, just like one can say, oh, things are so different now. And so we can't follow all this. So for the ordinary viewpoint, you could say, yes. But Prabhupada's idea, well, if people are so different they can't follow it, then change the minds of the people so they can follow it. Right? And that's done by preaching. That's what preaching's for. Otherwise, what's the need of preaching? If you just put out some things, people on their own go, oh, this is very nice, and then just do it themselves, then actually what do they need us for? Right? What do they need the preachers for? Right? So preaching means you go out and do something. You go out and tell people. You convince them. You find how to convince them. But your convincing means you convince them in
standard principles of Krishna consciousness, right? Not you convince them in something watered down. Yeah? No?
Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is also the Paramatman in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, does cleanse the desire for material enjoyment in the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge for hearing his Krishna's message, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Right? So that's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although he was known as an English preacher, right? So if you desire to hear Bhagavatam, to hear the discourses of Krishna, right? Bhagavatam, Gita, Krishna book, anything that is connected with Krishna. By that, then the desire for material enjoyment in the heart will be reduced, right? And then that will be replaced by the inspiration to be absorbed in Krishna, right? So that's always nice, because problem with the material things, because they're temporary, they're always going to give a problem to the living entity, right? Because it's temporary, because it's not connected to Krishna. Krishna is eternal, so what's connected with him is eternal. And what's not connected to him is temporary, right? That makes sense? So one may say, well, the material world's temporary, but it's Krishna's energy. It's coming from Krishna, right? One might think that. But if we think about it, the material energy itself is eternal, right? But its manifestation, how we see it, that's temporary. And why do we see it the way we see it? Because that's what we want to see. You understand? So because we want to see it, then there's a temporary manifestation, right? But if we're connecting everything to Krishna, then the material energy is functioning on the eternal platform. Understand? So she eternally exists, but the mundane manifestations, they come and go. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? What?
Is Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita the same?
Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, no. Bhagavad Gita means it's spoken. Bhagavat means it's is God, right? Bhagavan. So Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. So that means Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita. But Bhagavatam is spoken by the devotees about Krishna. Right? So it's two different books. So it's said that that's why it makes it sweeter, because when Krishna speaks, that's very sweet. But when the devotee is hearing that, then they speak it, it becomes more sweet. Right? The example given of that, the parrot, when it bites the fruit becomes more sweet. Right? So therefore, the parrot, Sukadeva, right? Sukadeva Goswami, when he speaks the knowledge of the Lord, and that, then it becomes more sweet. Right? And then like this, it comes down through the parampara. Yes? No?
Yes.
Good? Why not? Someone was telling me the other day that either they were saying that it happened to them, or it happened to their parents or something. That they were meeting somebody in the West and they had, you know, some fields, orchards, where there was fruit, and they were offering them fruit. And they said, oh, take this, it's very sweet. Said, the birds have tasted it. So somehow or another that makes it sweeter. So when the parrots eat it, then it becomes the sweetest. Right? So you guys could sit out here and under a mango tree, and when the parrots fly by, whistle and call them over and tell them, hey, eat this. And then you get sweeter mangoes. Yeah? Good service. You know, we could set you up over there. That could be your service all day. Give you a little bag of moody, you can sit there, call the birds. And... Yeah? No. You don't like moody? Huh?
I feel like the man that we turn bed is not down. I don't like the man that we turn bed.
You don't like the mangoes that the parrot has eaten it? No, but it leaves. It just bites it only. It doesn't eat the whole thing. Then you just get a seed and some skin. That you definitely wouldn't be so good.
don't want any muri. You just sit there all day. You can climb the tree if you want. Then you're a little closer to the birds, get them there. Point out the mango, you know, like that. Yeah? No? He likes the idea. No, he doesn't like the idea. You like the idea of your brother being up the tree. Oh, okay. Makes sense. You know what happened to him? Where's Robert Amon? Didn't come. Right. He might have liked this offer.
Although he was known as an English preacher, Bhaktivedanta Swami knew there were always faults in his presentation in that foreign language, and there was no editor to correct them. But such technical faults would not keep him from printing Srimad Bhagavatam. This idea was also presented in the opening chapters of the Bhagavatam. Quote, "The literature which is full with descriptions of transcendental glories, of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation of transcendental vocabulary, all meant for bringing about a revolution in the impious life of the misdirected civilization of the world. Such transcendental literatures, even though irregularly composed, is heard, sung, and accepted by the purified men who are thoroughly honest." So this was compiled 5,000 years ago. It's already talking about a revolution in the impious life of misdirected civilization of the world. Right? It didn't say, you know, of you know, the misdirected civilization in Surup Ganj or Navadweep or like that, or Calcutta or India. It said the world. Right? So this is already there. So this idea that people are not interested in God consciousness, basically speaking, in the material world, no one is ever interested in God consciousness. Doesn't matter what age it is. It's just a matter of if they're more pious or less pious. Does that make sense? Right? In the other ages, they may have been very, very pious and very, very elevated, but it's not necessarily they're interested in Krishna. Right? In Mahabharata, who was interested in Krishna? Pandavas. Anyone else? Bhishma. Vidura. Right? Like that. Draupadi, Kunti. But otherwise than that, who is interested? And there's so many people you're meeting. Like that. Very great people, very pious people, so we can learn much culture from them. You know, we can learn so many things on etiquette and how to interact and how to behave and how to do things very expertly. But as far as God consciousness, how many of them were God conscious? You understand? So, and that's talking about all times in the universe, right? All ages, different times everywhere, you know, especially the beginning stages. You're going back to the Prajapatis and everything like that. Remember the whole story of Garuda and the snakes and all that? Mm-hmm. Right? So were those sisters God conscious? No. They're simply betting over whether Ucha Shriva has a black tail or a white tail, right? He's a white horse, so, you know. But, you know, because like that. So then the one sister, then she says it'll be black and then tells all her sons, the snakes, they go take the form of hair and hide in his tail. So it'll be black. And then what's the point? Then you make your sister into a slave. Right? So, I mean, these are very nice interactions between sisters have always been going on. Right? Isn't it? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is whatever is going on now has always been going on. The only difference is previously people would be more pious and now they're less pious. But as far as lack of God consciousness and absorption just in the mundane, that's always been going on. That's why always there's preaching. Right? Kapila Muni, his mother and, you know, mother and father are great personalities, right? The sons and grandsons. The son and granddaughter of Lord Brahma, right? They're that elevated, you know, so they're Prajapatis. But still, he's preaching, you know, Shankya, the God-conscious philosophy to them. Yes? No? Getting bored now talking all this philosophy and everything. You want to rock also that way?
There's plenty. Just after the class, you have to put it back. That's the only thing. You can't keep the rock. You can just play with it during the class. Okay. What happened to your rock?
I don't need it.
You don't need it, so what do you do with it?
I put it back.
You put it back? Okay, cool. Put it back. See, this is satya sankalpa. What you speak is what happens. Very good. Okay, so since that's the point, then if Krishna consciousness is presented sincerely, those who are honest, it says thoroughly honest, they'll be comfortable with it. So they're not worried if the language is great or not, or the presentation is perfect or not. It's about the Lord, so they're interested. Right? So that's the point. So preaching always has to be going on. It's not a matter of, oh, it's now you can't preach. No, it's always been like this. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that it's different, it's just like, let's say you have a city, right? And in this city you'll have areas that are very nice, very clean, and you know, like that, wealthy people, and then you'll have parts of the city that are not so nice, not so clean, right? But it's the same city. And it's not that, you know, if it's nice and clean, they're more God-conscious. If it's not clean, they're less God-conscious. No, everybody's basically the same level of, you know, slight interest but not much interest in God-consciousness. You understand? So whether you're preaching in a nice neighborhood or not a nice neighborhood, still the point is you have to preach, otherwise people don't know. Yes? No? Yeah? Or would you rather sit under the tree with your bag of moody? You don't know. It depends what kind of moody it is, or how much moody. You want just plain moody, or we get some moody with some murky, or halud moody, or you want masala moody, you know, with the mustard oil and all the things. What moody you want? Moody with milk. Okay, that'll work. You want any falafels in it? Maybe?
No.
They're good. Falafels and moody, it could work, I think.
Okay. Bhaktivedanta Swami wrote in his purport, "We know that in our honest attempt for presenting this great literature, conveying transcendental message for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general, as a matter of re-spiritualization of the world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. Our capacity of presenting the matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there may be so many literary discrepancies in spite of our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of the society will still accept this on account of its being an honest attempt at glorifying the Almighty Great, so much now badly needed. When there is fire in the house, the inmates of the house go out for help. From the neighbors who may be foreigners to such inmates, and yet without any adequate language. The victims of the fire express themselves, and the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in adequate language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed in the matter of broadcasting this transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the whole polluted atmosphere of the present-day world situation. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and as such we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, There is the success. Right? So Prabhupada's mentioning is that when there's an emergency, then you go out there and somehow or another find a way to get people to understand. Right? So that's the point now. So it doesn't really matter this and that, the presentation, it's what's being presented. So it's a technical science, so that technique is what's important. Right? Other things are not as important. Does that make sense? So if we understand it, then we can give it, and then whatever's the situation, we'll figure it out. Right? Isn't it? Yes? No? Yeah. So it's not that there was any people were, it's not that people are any less or more God conscious. It's just a matter of even their more religious, some their understanding of God is not that great, and their ability to work together with others, you know, see everything as coming from Godhead, that then they have a problem, right? They all have their own ideas and this and that. Certainly Kali Yuga was such an emergency. The house was on fire. Honest men who could understand the need would welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it was now being presented, quote, with so many faulty and broken linguistic technicalities, end quote. Bhaktivedanta Swami was presenting Srimad Bhagavatam unchanged, with the greatest respect for Srila Vyasadeva, and that was his cardinal virtue. What's cardinal virtue? Really nice yellow bird, yes? Huh? Main virtue, yeah. Cardinal means main. Just like you have the cardinal directions. What are the cardinal directions?
North, south, east, west.
Yes, north, south, east, west. Then in between north and south, you have south, southeast, right? And between south and west, you have southwest, like that. So you have the main directions. Then you have in between, right? Even in one... I'm not sure. I think it's when Rupa Goswami presents doing the Dik Bandhana, when you close the directions, he'll say east, then next to that, south, then next to that, right? Rather than going east, southeast, south, south, like that. So you can do it either way, but it's understood the cardinal directions. Like, and where do the Dikpalas sit? Yes. Yeah, so the main sit in east, west, north, south. Do we remember who sits where?
Indra sits on the east.
Who?
Indra.
Indra's in the east, yes.
Yama in the south.
Yama in the south.
Varuna in the west.
Varuna in the west.
And Kuvera in the north.
And Kuvera in the north, yes. Very good. Yeah? No? Maybe. And then the other corners?
Fire. Agni in the southeast.
Southeast, yes, Agni.
Then Rudra in the southwest.
Yes, yeah, Rudra, but what form of Rudra?
Ishan.
No, that's in the other corner.
Near Vritti.
Huh? Niriti are also known as Stanu. Like that. So it's one of the 11 Rudras. So it's expansion of Lord Shiva. Like that.
Vayu in the...
Vayu, yeah.
Northwest.
Uh-huh.
And Ishan in the northeast.
Ishan in the northeast. Who else is sitting in the northeast?
Vamadev.
But who is the Ishan of the Ishan? Isha of the Ishan. Vishnu. You understand? So Vishnu's in that corner, also Shiva's in that corner, you know, as a devotee. So that's the northeast. And the southwest, then that is, you know, more of a form of Shiva's, you know, controlling and organizing. The other is more, you know, your knowledge or this kind of understanding. That's why, like, libraries would be in that corner. The deities are in that corner, like that kind of thing. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyone else? Anybody need to cough? Then this is the time. Let's have all the coughing now. You know, and then after that, then. Yeah. No one else? Anyone else? Coughing? Okay. That's it? Done? Yes?
Also, with Rashis and Astrology, can different Rashis represent on different directions?
Yes.
So, like the Brahmin Rashis in the north and the Shakti Rashis in the east? And
yes, yes. And south would be?
The south is the Rashis.
Oh, like that. Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
Ah, he was adding his own realizations, but not in a spirit of trying to surpass the previous spiritual masters. In the all-important matter of presenting the subject strictly in parampara, Bhaktivedanta Swami suffered from no, quote, faulty and broken technicalities, end quote. He knew that without the parampara, the Bhagavatam purports would have no value. Right? So he's worried that his English may not be, you know, the particular standard of the area where he's presenting it, right? So because he was learning at a previous time, he learned from the Scottish, you know, teachers were there, but he's presenting it, you know, for, you know, America and that, which they use the language slightly different and all. So in that way, he's worried that there may be some linguistic technicalities. But as far as his understanding of the philosophy and presenting it according to parampara, there's no mistakes at all. Right? That is perfect. You know, because without the parampara, it doesn't have any meaning. Day and night he typed at his desk beneath the small adjustable light that dangled from the ceiling on its cord. He sat on a thin mat, his back to the large pyramid that stood oddly upright within the bare room. Pages accumulated, and he kept them in place with stones. Why does he have to keep them in place with stones? He also likes stones. So yeah. The breeze doesn't blow him away. Okay. You're going to say the breeze. And where would this breeze come from? From the windows and doors. No fan. Maybe fan. Okay. But some variety of breeze is there, so you keep a stone on top. Okay, very good. You want a stone? They're popular. Food and sleep, although necessary, were only incidental. He was completely convinced that his Srimad Bhagavatam would create a revolution in a misdirected civilization. Thus he translated each word and gave each purport with exacting care and concentration, but it had to be done as quickly as possible. Right, so Prabhupada is so absorbed in the Bhagavatam that eating and sleeping are incidental. Just, you know, when they come, they're just on the side. It's not a focus. It wasn't that, you know, sitting here in the class now and thinking, wow, it's only 2.5 hours till Prashad. You know, like, not like that. Does that make sense? You know, so that wasn't the main thing. And then here is that he's convinced that it will create a revolution, therefore it's creating. Right? So it has that potency. And because of that, then each word, he's careful how he translates it, each word of the purport, how he says everything. So it's exactly thought out. Sometimes devotees say, oh, Prabhupada, you know, he's spiritual, doesn't know the material world and all that. But the point is he was living in Calcutta. You can't get more material world than Calcutta. You know, whatever there is going on in the planet, it's happening in Calcutta. Not only that, he was a businessman, and he was a good businessman. He traveled all over India, worked with everybody, talked to everybody. Everybody was comfortable with him when he talked. You never hear of anybody being uncomfortable, right? Up to now, we know. So how is it he wouldn't know what's going on in the world? In fact, how many devotees have ever done anywhere near what he's doing in the way of business and, you know, broadness of everything and that? Right? Very few.
you know, to have that determination. He's writing the leaders of the country, right? He's writing Gandhi and Nehru, you know, the president. You know what I'm saying? That would be like, you know, you're sitting in America, you write the president of America and tell him, I think you should add more God consciousness into your policies. You understand? That's what Prabhupada would do. Does that make sense? So it's not that he's not, doesn't know, and he's you know, not doing something. Right? Just sitting around and just being spiritual, chanting Japa and Vrindavan, you know, studying some Bhagavatam, and that's all he knows. No, he's doing a lot of things. He's, you know, going out printing, getting the money, making it work, distributing it himself. That's very qualified. Like that. Yeah. In February of 1961, on Vyas Puja Day, the anniversary of the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Bhaktivedanta Swami was again in Vrindavan. In honor of their spiritual master, some of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples had gathered, offered flowers before his picture, and held congregational chanting in the temple. But Bhaktivedanta Swami thought that they should be doing much more than that. They should be planning and executing the worldwide preaching mission that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had desired. Instead, they were a gathering of independent individuals, each with his own small idea, each maintaining a small center or living at a center, but with no world programs, not even a program for India. Most of them had no plans or visions beyond their own bodily maintenance. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had asked for a governing body to conduct the movement, but there was no governing body, and practically there was no movement. Some who had fought bitterly were again on speaking terms and feared that any sudden organizational attempts might simply stir up old animosities. At least they could gather together and make an offering to their spiritual master. Right? So they're just feeling good that now, this is 61, so then, you know, from 36, then it's 36, 46, 56, 25 years they've been fighting and everything. So now, you know, it's a little more peaceful. They can get together, have the Vyas Puja, you know, feel comfortable like that. So they're considering that's a great step forward, right? But if you talk anything about organizing, then they're thinking, oh, that'll start another fight. Why? Because one's trying to control it rather than how does it fit into the whole world plan, right? Or even just the whole India plan. Amongst his godbrothers, Bhaktivedanta Swami was a junior sannyasi. Although a recognized writer and editor, he had no temple or followers. Yet he knew he was trying to follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He saw himself helpless and alone against the vast forces of Maya. His godbrothers were not an army united against Maya's forces, but were more like apathetic monks, growing old, holding on to religious principles and rituals, devoid of life. How could they gather to worship the spiritual master without distressfully admitting their failure, and in the spirit of, quote, better late than never, end quote, trying to rectify it? Since the custom on Vyas Puja Day was for each disciple to write an offering glorifying his spiritual master and to share it with the assembly of godbrothers, Bhaktivedanta Swami wrote an offering, more like an explosion than a eulogy, and placed it before his godbrothers for their response. So from the offering. Even now, my godbrothers, you return here on the order of our master, and together we engage in this puja. But simply a festival of flowers and fruits does not constitute worship. The one who serves the message of the Guru really worships him. Oh shame, my dear brothers, aren't you embarrassed? In the matter of businessmen, you increase your disciples. Our master said to preach, let the neophytes remain inside the temples and simply ring the bells. But just take a look at the terrible situation that has arisen
Everyone has become a sense enjoyer and has given up preaching. From the seas across the earth, penetrate the universal shell, come together and preach this Krishna consciousness. Then our master service will be in proper order. Make your promise today. Give up all your politics and diplomacy.
Right? So, you know, therefore, you know, it's not a, political correctness is not actually what gets moves forward Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's you know, the plain truth here. So now, when Bhishma Dev was lying on the bed of arrows, right? And he, the Yudhishthir and the Pandavas, Krishna came to hear from him. Then it was required that his head be, you know, propped up. Right? Why would his head need propping up? What does propped up mean? It means, you know, it's not in a lifted up, raised up. Yes. So he could speak properly, but. What was, I mean, why is it that his head needed propping up and not the rest of his body?
The rest of his body was already propped up.
Already propped up. What was it propped up with?
Arrows.
Arrows. And why is it that his head wasn't propped up with arrows?
Because in the battle, they didn't shoot his head.
Yes, you don't shoot at the head, right? It means you can cut off their head, but you don't shoot at the head, right? Does that make sense? It's just... you always shoot at the body, that's the proper, yeah? So, then, what were the various options for propping up his head?
Pillows.
Who brought pillows? Duryodhana brought pillows. And what was the other option?
Arjuna could shoot more arrows.
Arjuna could shoot more arrows. So, who are you comparing him to that could shoot less arrows?
He could shoot more arrows to make an arrow pillow.
An arrow pillow. I see. Arrow pillow. You could probably market that, you know? Yes?
One of the Pandavas could hold his head.
Yeah, could hold his head, you know, but then that might get tiresome or something. But, so now... why, now, which did he accept, the pillows or the arrows as to hold up his head?
Arrows.
Arrows, why?
He said that since he was a warrior, he wanted a pillow befitting a warrior.
Yes.
So, as a warrior, then a pillow that befits a warrior should be given, right? So now, if you want to offer something to a preacher, what's appropriate?
Preaching.
Not flowers, fruits, and ringing bells. You can do that also if you're preaching. Right? So you're preaching. That's the real offering. Then this is the particular medium or ritual where you express your, you know, particular personal feelings on that day. But the real offering is the preaching. Right? So that's Prabhupada's point. Okay, so end here. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai.